chapter 30, entitled Description of an Adverse Fruit of Activities. Text number 4. Yantur vai bhava atasmin. Yam yam yonim anuvrajet.
Yam yam yonim anuvrajet.
Tasyam tasyam salabhate. Nivritim navirajate. Translation: the living entity, in whatever species of life he appears, finds a particular type of satisfaction in that species, and he is never averse to being situated in such a condition. Purport: the satisfaction of the living entity in a particular type of body, even if it is most abominable, is called illusion. A man in a higher position may feel dissatisfaction with the standard of life of a low-grade man, but the lower-grade man is satisfied in that position because of the spell of Maya, or the external energy. Maya has two phases of activities. One is called Pragyeshapatmika, and the other is called Avaranatmika. Avaranatmika means covering, and Pragyeshapatmika means pulling down. In any condition of life, the materialistic person or animal will be satisfied because his knowledge is covered by the influence of Maya. In the lower grade or lower species of life, the development of consciousness is so poor that one cannot understand whether he is happy or distressed. This is called avaranatmika. Even a hog who lives by eating stool finds himself happy, although a person in a higher mode of life sees that the hog is eating stool. How abominable that life is. Jantur vai bhava etashmin yam yam yonim anuvrijat tasyam tasyam salabhate nivrittim na virajayat. Translation: the living entity in whatever species of life he appears finds a particular type of satisfaction in that species, and he is never adverse to being situated in such a condition. So in this verse, Srimad Bhagavatam, the shloka, and Srila Prabhupada very meticulously analyze the potency of the power of illusion, Maya. We are devotees of the Lord. We are concerned with pure devotional service. Annibilasita sunyam jnana karma navritam anukulena krishnu shilanam bhaktir uttama. Why are we studying this verse, or why is Bhagavatam expounding the potencies of Maya, illusion? Why are we interested in hearing about this? Because Maya, illusion, or attachment, let us say our attachment to the material world, which is the illusion, is a great obstacle to our pure devotion. So it's important how we understand how the illusory energy is working. Because at the present moment, all of us, to a greater or lesser degree, are under her grips, under her influence. One time Srila Prabhupada said that to take to Krishna consciousness, to take up the process of Krishna consciousness, spiritual life, he said very poetically, it means to declare war on the material energy. That's a very strong statement. There are some differences between two countries, and push turns to shove, and there's some strong words, and there's some diplomacy. But at that point where one country declares war on the other country, this is something very serious. Actually, today is December 7th, 2007. But I think December 7th, 1944, 1945, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. I think today if you go on the internet and you look at the different websites, the BBC or CNN or whatever, this will...
41.
Thank you.
War ended at 41.
That's true, you're right. So So, 1941, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. Of course, you're Australian, you probably don't know much about that history. But that was the thing which caused America to go into World War II. They declared war on the Japanese, and a few weeks later they declared war on Germany, and then the rest is history. It was a very... You see the newspapers, there's the big headlines and big black bold letters. War. Declared war. People, whoa. So when you come to the temple and then you chant and then you dance and then you hear the Bhagavad and then you think, yes, I'd like to be like these people. I'd like to take up the process of Krishna consciousness. Boom. Big bold letters in the harmonist. This devotee has declared war on the material energy. The big thing. Who is our opposition? Who is our enemy? In military school, every soldier is taught that before considering an engagement against the enemy, even if it's just a firefight, which means like just a small platoon fighting another platoon of the enemy, or what to speak of a king is considering, you know, taking on another king, another country. The student is taught that first you should very carefully analyze your foe's strengths and his weaknesses. It's one of the first things you learn. In fact, there's a famous book which is called The Art of War by Sun Tzu. It's still a classic even today, although it was written thousands of years ago in China. Even today, it's considered kind of like a manual or a foundation for military exercises or practice. And there, the author, Sun Tzu, he says, it's chapter 3, verse 18. He said that if you know the enemy and you know yourself, you need not fear the result of 100 battles. So in one sense, Maya's our enemy. She's a devotee, but we know she has, Prabhupada says, she has the thankless task of keeping the rebellious living entity in the material world. We were discussing yesterday how we fall from grace, the cardinal sin. We turn our face from God, which means, as the Christians say, and we eat the forbidden apple. It means that we want to enjoy separately from Krishna. Instead of being happy in Krishna's service as his part and parcel, somehow or other we have this little independence and we have a little bit of rebellious nature, the devil within, and we choose not to. It's a very small percentage of the living entities in the spiritual world. And then that mood is not tolerated in the spiritual world where love reigns supreme. It's all intimate loving dealings. And if somebody has some inclination otherwise, out. Don't disturb the mood. It's like when Lord Chaitanya was doing kirtan, Srivasangam. The kirtans were for his most confidential loving servants. For his pure devotees, actually. He was just relishing that name, the chanting of the holy name, glorifying Krishna. And we hear how one person somehow snuck in there who didn't have that pure heart. He was a transcendentalist in a sense that he was a very austere. He only drank milk. He was becoming detached from material life by performing penances and austerity. Mahaprabhu immediately picked up, oh, there's something, someone's not a pure devotee here. Well, he complained. That person was discovered. And he was kicked out. So in even the slightest discrepancy in that in one's devotion, one cannot enter into the kingdom of God. The heart has to be completely cleansed of all material desires, and what's more, one has to have awoken that pure love for Krishna. Krishna consciousness is more about pure devotional service than it is cleansing the heart. Now we're struggling to get to the point of anartha nivritti, where the heart is cleansed of all lust and anger and greed. That is our kind of our focus at this stage of devotional service, and we're thinking about it. But Srila Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur once wrote that Krishna consciousness is more about pure devotion to Krishna than it is just cleansing the heart, although first things first. We have to cleanse the heart first. before that tender creeper of devotion can begin to grow. Just like you have to take care of the soil properly before the healthy plant can grow. You put the nutrients in, you pull out the weeds, then you plant the seed, and then it grows very nicely. So, if one is a little inimical, then he's sent to the kingdom of Maya. She takes over. And her job is to keep us here so we don't sneak back in, I guess you could say. Her job is to keep us here. Oh. To propose so many allurements that we don't disturb the Lord in his transcendental pastimes in the spiritual world. She's very good at it. The very first verse in the Bhagavad describes how the demigods themselves are influenced by the illusory power of the Lord. Srila Vyasadeva says it, uses a very nice analogy. He says, just as water is seen on land, or land is seen on water, we call that a mirage. It looks so real when you're at sea and you see the sun reflecting off the water. Some of you have probably sailed. You're sailors because you live in Sydney, and it's a very famous harbor, and this is Australia. Lots of boats are out there. So you're out on the boat, and you see the reflection on the water, and it looks like land. Land ho! And you go, and you go, and you go, and there's no land. Or you're in the desert. These analogies are perfect for your country. You're on the desert. You're out at Alice, on your way to Alice Springs. You're walking. You're thirsty. You're dying of thirst, and then you see reflected, you see what looks like water on the horizon. Actually, it's simply the reflection of the sun off the sand, the silicon, the sand is reflecting. It looks, and you run towards the water, and you never make it, and you die. So Vyasadeva uses this analogy that just as water is seen on land and land is seen on water, It's a mirage, it confuses. So even demigods, as intelligent as they are, and how intelligent are they? Oh my gosh. They're controlling the wind and the rain and the sun and the light, and far beyond our ability to even comprehend. But they're also deluded by this illusory energy of the Lord. So this is Maya Devi's thankless task. One time, she complained to the Lord, actually. That's described in the Navadvip Dham Mihatna by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He describes there as a passage where Maya Devi approaches Lord Chaitanya in Navadvip, and she complains. She says, "My dear Lord, you're the most merciful incarnation. And by your special mercy, everyone in Kali Yuga is getting a chance to go back home, back to Godhead. What about me?" There doesn't appear to be any opportunity. I have to stay here and, you know, utilize my influence to bewilder these rebellious souls. How will I ever make it back home? So Lord Chaitanya smiles. He says, "No, you're already there." He said, "You are here and you are there. Because there you exist as Mahamaya, Yogamaya. And the expansion of Yogamaya into the material world is Mahamaya. You're just her expansion. Maya means illusion, and Yogamaya, that illusion is used to facilitate devotional service in the spiritual world. And when she expands into the material world, that same potency is utilized to bewilder the conditioned souls. The same person. We can just try to appreciate how powerful is this Yogamaya? Then we can appreciate how powerful she is in her form of Mahamaya. In the spiritual world, Yogamaya bewilders those eternally liberated souls. Bewildered in the sense that not they become confused, but they are caused to forget that Krishna is God. To facilitate sweet, intimate, loving dealings with the Lord. Because if they thought Krishna was God, then there's that aishwarya, that mood of awe and reverence. Naturally, if someone is your authority, be he the king or the president, the prime minister, your teacher, your parents. There's always a mood of awe and reverence. It may be a loving relationship. You may really love your dad, but he's your dad. And there's always, yes, sir. Like I taught my son when I was in the Grihastha Ashram, when he woke up every morning, he had to come and offer his obeisances to his parents. Sometimes when I'm traveling, I ask the children, do you offer your obeisances to your parents every morning? They start laughing. What? My dad, my mom? No. They're the ones that, as Prabhupada writes in his introduction, rather his dedication to the Krishna book, to my father, Gaur Mohan Day, who instilled within me an impression of Krishna consciousness, which was later solidified by my eternal father, Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Thakura. So that Maya Devi, she has this potency because in the spiritual world, as Yoga Maya, she covers the devotees. Not covers, but it's a play, it's a leela. She takes away that sense of awe and reverence that Krishna is God. And for the residents of Vrindavan, he's just Kanai, he's just a little boy. He's the most wonderful boy. He's the most wonderful friend. He's the most wonderful lover. No one can be a better lover than my Krishna. So that they can have that intimate loving exchanges in those rasas. This is something amazing. This is something that we hear only from the Gaudiya Vaishnava literature. You won't find this in even other Vaishnava sampradayas. To a little degree, maybe. But not as we are, as is revealed to the Gaudiya Vaishnava literature. Actually, Krishna enlightened the whole world to this fact by sending Uddhava to Vrindavan. Uddhava, who was Uddhava? Uddhava was Krishna's personal friend. He was his associate. He was his advisor in Dwarka. When Krishna needed some advice, he said, call Uddhava. So Uddhava, what do you think? Krishna, I think like this. So there in Dwarka, Krishna is worshipped in that mood of awe and reverence. He's the king, the majestic king. But to instruct Uddhava, who was his very dear friend, and for that matter to instruct the whole world, Krishna sent Uddhava to Braj. Well, the purpose of sending a message to all the Braj Basis, because Krishna left that place when he was a young boy, and he promised all those residents of Vrindavan, I'll be right back. Even that was more than they could handle. Even the thought of separation, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur analyzes this Vipralamba Bhava very nicely. He said, even the anticipation of separation from Krishna made the residents of Vrindavan go mad. Mathura Mangala, a very beautiful poem in Orissa, describes the anxiety of the gopis when they heard that Krishna's going to Mathura. We can understand their level of the feeling of separation by the nature of their attachment. If you're very attached to something and you lose it, then your separation is very deep. If you're not so attached, it's not a big thing. But if you're very attached, you lose your favorite whatever, and then you can't find it. Then the separation is very strong. So the greatest attachment of all is the gopis for Krishna. So just the thought of his leaving Vrindavan, those girls just went mad. They tried to stop the horses. They laid down in front of the chariot of Akura. They were crying and pleading to Krishna. But he left. I'll be right back. Well, what is right back for them? One moment is like 12 years or more in separation from the Lord. These things are hard for us to understand because we're still hankering and lamenting on the material platform. We don't know really what these... One time they had a really nice kirtan and a disciple said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, that was ecstasy. Prabhupada said, what? You do not know what is ecstasy. These things are waiting. Our future is very bright if we are very diligent and proceed with determination. So Krishna left, and all the residents were missing him, so he thought he would send them a message to pacify them. So Uddhava was the bearer of that message. And he was so amazed by their reactions. Krishna wrote to Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yasoda, "Don't worry, Mata. Don't worry, Pita. I'm the Supreme Truth. I'm the Supreme Pure. I'm the Eternal Person. Everyone is always dependent upon me. Don't feel that you're disconnected from me. I have a relationship with everyone. I am the Supreme Truth." So when Nanda Maharaj heard this letter from Krishna, he said, "Krishna's not the Supreme Pure." You see how he's covered by the yoga maya. He's not God. He's not the Supreme Pure. He would roll in the dust, and every half hour we would have to bathe him. He's not the Supreme Truth. He would steal butter, and we would catch him, and he would deny it. "No, I have not stolen butter. He's not the Supreme Truth. And he's not the Eternal Person, because he took birth from the womb of my wife. He's a little boy. We saw him grow up right before our eyes. How is he an Eternal Person? He took birth from the womb of Yashoda." And when Mother Yashoda heard this statement, or this letter from Krishna, Krishna says everyone's dependent upon him? No! Krishna's dependent upon me. If I didn't give him my breast milk every day, he would die. So Uddhava's thinking, what is this bhakti? I thought I loved Krishna, but these people appreciate and love him more than me, more than anyone else. I've never seen such elevated, pure sentiments of love for Krishna. These Brajbasis, they're so great, I want the dust of their feet upon my head. It's very hard to get the dust of the feet of a devotee on your head, because devotees are very humble. They're never thinking they're very qualified. Even the most advanced devotee, he thinks he's the most fallen. He doesn't put himself forward. He's always in the back. He's very humble and glorifying the others. To get the dust of my feet? If you take the dust of my feet, you'll become contaminated. So Uddhava was thinking, how to get the dust of the feet of these Brajbasis? So he devised one plan. In the Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, he says, "Just let me remain here in Braj as some grass, as some clump of herbs, some little plant or shrub, and maybe the gopis will come and they'll step on me." Or he says, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, he thinks maybe the wind the dust from their feet will blow across the grass of Braj, and I'll get the dust from their feet. So we're just telling these little pastimes of the spiritual world to show how powerful is the yoga maya, that even those liberated souls, nitya siddhas, not liberated in the sense that they were in maya and they got liberated, they're nitya siddhas. They're eternally liberated souls. To facilitate loving exchanges with the Lord, Yogamaya covers them. Krishna's not God. He's the best friend ever. He's the best lover ever. He's the best child ever. And the potency is also, Yogamaya's service also is to bewilder Krishna. Of course, Krishna can't be bewildered, but the Leela is there. He also forgets that he's God. So they just play like the best friends, they're equals, and they're lovers, and they're the babies, and it's all so wonderful. Now that same Yogamaya expands, according to Navadvipa Mahatmya, it expands into the material world, and her service is to bewilder the conditioned souls. Ultimately, we know why. We discussed that extensively the other day. To bring the living entity to the point of frustration. Krishna says there's four types of souls who surrender to me: the distressed, the curious, looking for some facility and looking for knowledge. The main category is distress. Out of distress, "Oh my God, please help me." The whole purpose of the material creation, the whole purpose of Maya, is to bring us to our knees. "Lord, have mercy on the soul." Okay. You're ready? Chant. Hare Krishna. It was like when Jagai and Madhai, such rascals! Such rascals! Even the preaching of Lord Nityananda and Haridas Thakur could hardly convince them. Madhai made a mistake. He took the pot and hit the head of Nityananda. But Lord Chaitanya came, the Sudarshan. And Nitai said, but that's not your leela. In this incarnation, you're just the mercy incarnation. Put away your chakra. Give them mercy. So Mahaprabhu said, all right, but do you promise no more sinful activity? Yes, sir, we promise. And do you promise you'll chant the holy names of Krishna? Yes, sir. So because they were brought to their knees, and they promise, okay, no more, finish with this material activity. All right, you're a candidate for devotional service. Who is a real candidate for devotional service? One who is akinchana gochara, who has no material possessions, or for us that means no attachment to material possessions. No more material, exhausted. I'm exhausted, just like yesterday we came back from Harinam, we were exhausted. We were chanting 10 o'clock at night in the new town. People were loving it. We didn't want to stop. The only reason we stopped because there were no more people. Came back exhausted. But in one sense, it was sort of refreshed internally, but exhausted. Well, I can just go to bed. So when one is materially exhausted, then he becomes a ripe candidate for devotional service. As Prabhupada said one time, real bhakti begins when sex life stops. When you give up sex desire, then bhakti begins. You become a candidate for real devotion, real love to Krishna. So that's Maya's. That's the way we learn. Argumum ad baculum. Sometimes the stick is employed. There's four types of diplomacy. You offer some sweet words. Please don't do that. You give some gift to encourage the person. You offer him some position. Nothing else works? I was mentioning the other day, I heard a tape, Prabhupada said, the sweet words, Krishna, accompanies us for some distance as we fall into the material world. My dear devotee, please don't leave the spiritual world. No, I'm going. No, please stay, Prabhupada said. No. Please, no. Australia, America, Canada. So sweet words, some gifts, and this is all Niti Shastra. And nothing else? All right, the danda, the rod of chastisement. Bang, 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 bang. Krishna! As Rupa Goswami prays so nicely in Padyavali, my dear Lord, I'm drowning in the fathomless whirlpool of material existence. Please, just this one time, extend your hand to save me. So what does that mean? It's a figurative thing. It's not that just long hand. What is that? That's the mercy of the Vaishnavas. The Lord sends the Vaishnavas. So same person, Maya, but different mission, but so potent. So potent. Actually, not exactly the same potency, because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he writes in Sharata Darshani that when Balaram, who was the seventh child of Devaki, he was transformed to the womb of Rohini, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, not by the potency of Mahamaya, because Mahamaya doesn't have the potency to transfer Balaram from one womb to the other. He said, it could only be Yogamaya. These are some subtleties, but anyway, for all practical purposes, Yogamaya and Mahamaya are the same, with the same potency. And we should never underestimate her power. Like I said the other day, Prabhupada told Kulashekhar Das, your problem, my dear disciples, you're not afraid of Maya. We have to be cautious. We're living in her kingdom and she can strike at any moment. So we have to be ready. We have to be aware. What are her tricks? So Prabhupada is enlightening us here in the purport. How she works. She throws and she covers. We're getting a very good analysis of our opposition, so we know how to engage or to avoid the engagement, let us say, not to confront her. But she's ready to strike at any moment. By hearing these things, knowing how she's working, we know what to avoid: illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, gambling. These are the basic things, but there's so many subcategories. Aha, no, I know. Yes, no, thank you, sir. Only Krishna consciousness. And you may be a little bit sleepy, and she catches you off guard. Recently, a nice devotee has been caught off guard. Some illusion is there. She can strike. Even the biggest. The bigger they are, the harder they fall. Prabhupada said, many stalwarts on the path of devotion, great devotees, have fallen prey to the attraction of money and women. We have to be like the ninjas. Everyone likes it. The ninjas are like, you know, romantic, you know, warriors, and there's all kinds of books and movies about ninjas and their little stars. And they're black and they high, and they can, looks like they can jump from one building to the next, and it's, wow, ninjas. Well, ninjas, they had this ability. They were trained in school that even in sleep they were awake to an attack by an enemy. They were trained that while they were sleeping, they were always ready for the attack, the ninjas. And what the martial arts teacher would do is he would come with his bamboo stick. While they were sound asleep, the teacher would creep into the room and his big bamboo stick, and then he'd hit the ninja soldier on the head. But if the ninja was a good ninja, he would just hear the swish of the bamboo stick and he'd wake up. See, our martial arts boys, they're all like, can you do like that? If I come tonight with a bamboo stick and you're sound asleep? Just the swish of the sound to the air. That's ninja. Not that you go to the store and like on Halloween you buy a black ninja suit, you know, and you go trick-or-treat. This is not ninja. Oh, so expert. But we cannot be any less expert, diligent in our practice of Krishna consciousness. Because she's on the prowl, she wants to test. Are you really sincere? Do you really want to go back to Godhead? Let me offer you this temptation. And we just have to say no. She can make something that is illusion look very real. Even a magician can do that. There's that story that Prabhupada related one time, that famous magician in Bengal. This is going back, I think, 200 years, 250 years. There was the king of one court in Bengal. He wanted some family entertainment. Well, he heard about this famous magician, so he called for this magician to come and do some tricks for the royal family. And, you know, it's kind of an in-house thing, and some of the ministers and some VIP friends. And well, they're all there in the court sitting, and the magician comes and does all those little things that magicians do. He took a gold coin and put it in somebody's ear and pulled it out the other side. Wow. He pulled something out of a hat. He made something disappear, and he does all kinds of things. Then he really got down to business. Man, so many magical things, and the king and queen are applauding. Pretty nice, pretty nice. So the queen, she so appreciative, she takes off a diamond necklace and she says to her servant, give it to the wife of the magician. This is a little family, the wife and the husband and kids, you know, they're doing the magic show for the king and queen. They take off. So then the servant gives it to the lady, the magician, and the husband, he takes it away. He said, I'm doing all the tricks. What are you doing? You're just my assistant. She says, no, it was given to me. Give it back. He says, no, I'm the magician. Give it back. And there's this, all of a sudden, the magic show turns into an argument between husband and wife. And they're arguing back and forth, and they break the necklace, and all the diamonds go all over the floor. So the magician, he takes out his sword, and he screams at his wife. He loses all control, and he
cuts off her head.
And the head rolls to the feet of the king and the queen.
Oh my, that's a ghast.
So the son of the magician saw that the father had killed it. So he takes out his sword and he stabs his father in the back. Then his sister picks up the sword that took off the head of the mother and kills her brother. And then she takes a knife and kills herself. This all happened within a span of about 10 minutes. There's this blood everywhere and, you know, decapitated heads and people. This is, oh my gosh, the royal family, they're crying and people are screaming and running from the thing and this river of blood and guts and, oh, it's horrible. And the king's just shaking. And he just takes the family, let's get out of here. And they go into the royal chambers and, he orders the servants, clean up the mess and throw the bodies into the river. The talk of the kingdom for weeks and months. And one day, about 9 months later, a courier comes with a letter for the king. Special delivery. Allowed into the court, and the king at that time is giving some darshan, and the letter is brought in, and the king opens it. What? My dear king, my dear queen, my dear members of the royal family, my deepest respects unto all of you. We hope that you liked our magic show. I'm sorry that it appeared to end in such a horrific way, but do remember that we are the best magicians in the land. And it was all a show. Could you please return the diamond necklace? This is a true story. Prabhupada recounted it as a true story. And it's there in some annuals of the Bengali literature, actually, where Prabhupada referred to it. It was a true story. They were actually able, just like nowadays, these magicians, I've heard that they can do amazing things. There's some names, I don't have the names, but you know, people pay hundreds of dollars to go to these shows, and they're just like, wow, how did they do that? So if a magician can do something, so imagine what the supreme magician, Mayadevi, can do. She can do so much. Even demigods. So what to speak of little puny human beings like us? But the mercy of the sadhus is that they reveal her tricks. No magician wants his tricks revealed. They actually have a very closed society. And you know, you pay money. I mean, there's lots of organizations that try to find out the secret, how these guys do it. But it's a very tight, very hard to find out. But the sadhus are so merciful, they point the greatest magician, Maya, they point out how these things are happening. So Prabhupada speaks quite analytically here in the purport. He's revealing to us so that we can understand how she's working. She throws and she covers. What is her covering potency? Her covering potency, she causes the living entity to think that he's a material body. What? Spirit, soul, eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, thinking that he's a body made of matter. 300 muscles, 700 bones, 1 liter of blood, an ounce of skin, and you throw a little hair in. Mix it up nicely. Pack it like that. Aham amiti. I am this body. You look inside the body? Have you ever seen a surgical operation? Then you really understand how beauty is only skin deep. You just see, oh, this beautiful body. You make an incision from here to here and you open it up. It's disgusting. And it has a certain scent inside of the body, which is very disgusting. One of my friends, not a devotee, but he works with the emergency ambulance corps in America. And he said the hardest thing about going to these accident scenes is the stench of the body when it's open. It's horrific. Somehow we're thinking, yes, this I am. What is this? How is this possible? How can any intelligent person? Oh, your intelligence is stolen by illusion, Gita says. We have to think about these things, actually. And the gist of Prabhupada's purport is that this maya is so strong that not only does the living entity think that he's the human body, but he even thinks he's something lower than the human being. Prabhupada uses the word hog, which is, you know, we say pig is even worse than hog somehow. But pig is like, you know, because you go to India, you see what pigs are like. Here they're glorified. Some 15 years ago, they had a little figure for, you know, something, campaign for the children, Miss Piggy. Cute in America, Little Miss Piggy, Little Miss Piggy, Little Miss, you know, she was doing something, and all the kids were buying Little Miss Piggy, and she had a little, you know, dress on with a little pink tie, and she's so cute, and saying all these things to the children, and everybody wanted to buy a pig. They wanted to be like the pig. You see, what's the pig in India? The pig, where does the pig, where does the pig live? He lives in the sewer. He's very happy in the muck and the mire and the stool, and he's thinking, I am very happy like this. Who's the pig? He's just like you and me. Jivar Swapoya Krishnara Nitya Das, we're all eternal servants of Krishna. He's also a jiva. But what has happened to that jiva? The covering potency has caused him to think, I am pig. This is so embarrassing. So embarrassing. How does it happen? How is it possible that you know, the soul can think he can be happy in a sewer? Well, there's even more refined understandings given later on by Prabhupada in the Bhagavatam that actually once we're in the material world and then we're doing this transmigration from one body to the next, when the sinful soul dies, when the person who's been very sinful in his life dies, then Yamaraj takes his soul to a type of purgatory, you could say. The Christians have this saying, you know, between heaven and hell there's a purgatory, something in between. So here is a scientific explanation from Bhagavatam, what is really purgatory? Purgatory is that place that Yamaraj takes you, and if you're sinful, it means that due to your sins, you're not going to get a human form of life. You're going to get something lower. You're going to get the body of a hog, because you've ate all abominable substances, and you've acted like a lower species. You haven't acted like a noble human being. So he takes that soul, and he trains that soul to live in the body of a pig. Yamaraj does this. There's a place in Yamalok where the soul gets trained. He gets accustomed, and then he likes that body. This is amazing. How much detail there is in the Bhagavatam. Because how is it possible? You have to practice. It's what we say, an acquired taste. They say wine is an acquired taste. Who in his right mind would think that wine is something nice? If you've ever tasted wine, when you were a kid, you know, the young people, they're pure in their habits, and then by bad association, the friend offers them a marijuana cigarette or offers them a glass of wine. What is the pleasure of inhaling smoke into the lungs? Horrible! Or you take alcohol, which is a poison, and you drink it. When I was a child, my mother and father would have these parties, and then they'd have cocktail parties, and they'd all get drunk and fall asleep, and me and my brother and sisters, we'd get up, you know, early morning, and we'd go around and sip all the little glasses that were left over. Such a sinful environment. It was horrible. And then, you know, we stopped it because it tasted so bad. But we didn't understand how adults, they keep doing it. And then it's an acquired taste. And then you think, this is very nice sherry. This is very nice port wine. This is what? It's an acquired taste. So, and that way, through that analogy, we can understand how the covering potency works, that it's a question of training. No, I don't want to do it. Do it, Yamaraj said. No, I don't want to do it. Oink, oink, oink. And then after a while, oink, 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 oink. Where's the stool? So embarrassing. We should be embarrassed when we hear these things. Actually, we're only laughing at ourselves. Because as long as you maintain material attachments, as long as you have the slightest inclination to anything other than devotional service, We're in the same position as Indra when he fell. He made an offense and he was cursed to come to the earth, Indra, and he took birth as a pig in a family. And Narada Muni tried to come and preach to him. No, sir, I'm very happy here. I mean, that's a famous play. At least we used to do it a lot. But we're in that position. So how to deal with this Maya? Well, basically, we should just avoid her. In that same book, Art of War, Sun Tzu, he says, if equally matched, we will offer battle. If slightly inferior in numbers, we will avoid the enemy. And if unequal in every way to our opposition, we will flee from him. So that is our position, not to engage Maya. What to do? She's there on the prowl, she's on the hunt. There's a way you can actually disarm her, and she'll have no influence on you. And what could that be? Such a powerful personality? How could you, a little jivatma, disarm her who is bewildering even the demigods? Krishna gives a hint in Gita. First he speaks about the material energy, then he tells us how to deal with it. Daivyesha gunamai mamamaya duratyaya mam eva ye papadyante mayamitam tarantite. This divine energy of mine, consisting of the modes of nature, difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily overcome Maya. There appears to be a process. Those who have surrendered to Krishna. How does that work? Well, in short, because I only have a few minutes left, when Maya Devi, whose job is to keep us bound up in this illusion of material life, she's a very chaste and faithful, loyal servant of Krishna. When she sees that we're trying to give up our selfish pursuits of sense gratification in this world and serve her beloved Lord, who's her Ishtadeva, she lifts the curtain of illusion for the devotee, who's then free to serve the Lord. Just like if someone bum comes off the street here and he comes into the temple and he has some appreciation for Krishna. Even though he's a bum, you want to facilitate. Oh, sir, well, stay with us, take some prasad, hear this. Okay. You have some compassion because he's shown some love for your Lord. Just like Prabhupada was at 26 Second Avenue and some bum came in with some toilet paper and, you know, put it in the water closet. And Umapani Maharaj told me, oh, just get this bum. Prabhupada said, no, he's doing some service for Krishna. Show some compassion. He's a bum, but he wants to do something. Prabhupada saw, oh, he's not bum. He wants to offer some seva to my Lord. So let me help him. So Maya, when she sees that you are giving up some selfish interest to enjoy, and you want to do some seva, you want to glorify your Lord. If you just want to sit and chant, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama. And she thinks, this person wants to serve my Lord. And my Lord wants these people to be delivered. So he has a change of heart. And Maya sees you have a change of heart. Then gradually, she lifts the curtain of illusion and you can see things as they are. So you can't confront her, you can't defeat her. Only a powerful devotee like Haridas Thakur can defeat Maya. He defeated her. He made her into a devotee. She came, there's that Leela in Chaitanya Charitamrita. She came to try to make him fall down. There's two prostitutes actually, it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. One of them was Maya. Ma'am, you please wait. I will entertain your desire, but I have to finish my Nam Vrat. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram. So he had a big Vrat, 300,000 names a day. So her good fortune was that she could hear the chanting from the lips of a pure devotee. Prabhupada says that the chanting is always effective. But it's particularly effective when you hear it from the lips of a pure devotee of Krishna. That's why I often say that nowadays there's so many CDs and bhajan tapes and DVDs and we have the music. But let us never forget the special effect of hearing the kirtan, the bhajan, from the lips of Srila Prabhupada. Bandeham Sri Guru Siyuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavam. Oh, when I hear that, I just... Like yesterday, Raghava put on the little music. Like the snake who gets controlled by the snake. And then, we'll just listen to the Bhagavatam. But if in the temple, sound system, we have the bhajans of Shri. Sham Sharadava Nalalita Loka Tanaya Karunyaganaganatvam Prapas. And something magical happens in the heart. We should have those kirtans, I would say, most of the time. Other ones are nice also, but let us never forget that we have that advantage due to science, that it was recorded and we can hear it regularly. So that's what happened to Maya. She heard from Namcharya Haridasa Thakur and she became devotee. We can't think that our chanting will make Maya... No. But we can endear ourselves to her by taking up the process of devotional. And gradually she lets go, and when she sees that we're completely sincere, no more material desires, then we're back under the full protection of Krishna, and we have the opportunity for going back home, back to Godhead. So these are some thoughts on how to deal with our opposition, how to overcome, as Krishna says, and go back home, back to Godhead. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki.